and welcome to another edition of Basketball. I'm Sean Woodley.
And I'm Katie Heindel.
And today's show is brought to you, of course, by Rasheed Wallace, who on this day in 2013 was named an assistant coach for the Detroit Pistons. I didn't know he ever served as an assistant for the Detroit Pistons before, Katie, but this makes me a little bit happy, but also a little bit sad because, of course, as we covered last week, his relationship with the Pistons has since soured on account of their move from the Palace at Auburn Hills to Little Caesars Arena. Were you aware that Sheed was a former Pistons assistant?
How long was he an assistant for?
I can't glean that from this story. It seems as though he was going to Summer League as the sort of main draw here. In fact, you'll like this, particularly because of the youth. This is from the story written by, who do we got? Ashley Duncak from the CBS local in Detroit. President of Basketball Operations Joe Dumars talked at length a little more than a week ago about bringing Wallace back to Detroit, though new head coach Maurice Cheeks originally deemed it a crazy idea when he broached the subject with Dumars. Both thought it might actually work well, particularly because the youth Detroit has in its front court with Andre Drummond and Greg Monroe, as well as second-round pick Tony Mitchell, the Pistons could benefit from someone who played 16 seasons in the NBA and exhibited solid defense and rebounding. Now my cockles are warmed by the thought of Rasheed Wallace coming in to nurture and help develop our mutual fave, Greg Monroe. That's lovely, Katie.
Yeah, but why didn't he stay?
Maybe he just found the rat race of assistant coaching not to be his whole thing. I guess he went and played for the Knicks after this, so that might be it. He decided to go back and play. I'm going to go assistant coaching career Rasheed Wallace. This is a whole new rabbit hole I did not know existed, but this is fun. Yeah. Either way, as I look this up, Katie, how are you doing? How was your week?
It was good. It's been very busy. Got a lot of interviews lined up, some exciting things. Going to the optometrist also on Saturday. Might get glasses.
Oh, glasses, huh? I've been having a real tough relationship with my eyewear this summer. It's too hot and sweaty to wear glasses, and my eyes are too annoyed and bothered by contact lenses. And so it's been been a lot of let's look up how much LASIK costs for me this week.
Like, I guess it was almost 2 years ago now when I worked at Mocha and I got a piece of metal lodged in my eye, which sucked. But when I went to the emergency optometrist, and later the hospital to deal with that situation, I did one of those, I did the eye test, and when they cover each of your eyes. And when they covered my right and I was looking with my left, it was like, oh, holy shit, I can't really see anything.
Oh,
like
no.
far away this eye. So my vision is pretty fine, I'd say. But I think it's the distance stuff that, gets to me. Like even when we're at a game, for example, catch myself occasionally squinting, and I just don't really want it to get worse. So that's where I'm coming from.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. By the way, I've discovered the answer to our question as to how long Sheed was with the Pistons, and it brings about another friend of ours, and maybe makes us upset at our friend. We'll see. He worked for the Pistons for the 2013-14 season, but was not rehired to the staff of new coach Stan Van Gundy the following year. What the hell was Stan thinking, Katie?
Stan at that time was probably just all in on the fact that he's like, I'm the coach and GM or whatever. Not a smart idea.
Sure.
So my guess is, most coaches come in and they want to clean house and bring in their own staff.
Yeah, that's fair. By the way, I misspoke. Sheed's career was done by 2013. His Knicks stint was 2012-13 before he was let go before the playoffs. But either way, good stuff all around. We got a busy show today, Katie. The finals are going on right now. I've been, not going to lie, a little detached from the conference finals because they bummed me out on account of all the injuries and whatnot. But finals matchup was quite fun. And Chris Paul had an amazing game one. The Suns lead 1-0 at the time of recording. I believe game two is tonight on Thursday. And so we're going to talk about that and mostly talk about Chris Paul and kind of dig into what is a really wonderful story that it seems as though some people who, let's say they were not exactly Chris Paul acolytes, are finally coming around on Chris Paul 16 years into his career. And that seems very overdue because Chris Paul has always been awesome. We'll talk about Chris Paul and his very circuitous path to making the NBA Finals and potentially winning himself a title, which would be very, very cool. So that's coming up. And then in the segment we're trying out this week, we're doing an entire segment based on Devin Booker's water bottle and sort of parlor playing that into a talk of literature. That's all the teas I'm going to give for that for now. Of course, before we get into the show itself, please, a reminder, go to patreon.com/abasketballwith2h's. You can support us on Patreon there. It's $4 US, $5.50 Canadian per month to get into our Discord chat, get access to our mailbag episodes, which we realized in our sort of rush to record an episode last week when I was going on vacation for a few days, we did not record our June mailbag. So we're going to record our June mailbag today. And so please get your questions in, or you already had the chance to get your questions in, but please get your Patreon subscriptions in so you can listen to said mailbag. I just got there. Don't worry, Katie. I figured my way around it. So thank you in advance for doing that. And if you're already one of our supporters, we love you so, so much. You're the very, very best. All right, Katie, let's get to it. We're going to talk a lot about Chris Paul, who is having himself a moment in the NBA Finals to start off the show. That's coming up in just 1 second. All right, Katie, it's time to talk about the finals and more particularly Chris Paul. We'll get into Chris Paul and sort of our appreciation. We're calling this the Chris Paul Power Hour is what you've listed it as in our doc here. So I'll go with that. But before we get to that, just your general thoughts on game one of the finals, the matchup itself. You know, it seemed like the Hawks might be able to get in there with Giannis getting hurt. Giannis, of course, comes back in game one of the finals, looks sort of good, a little bit not like himself, but still had an insane chase down block and looked reasonably okay on that knee that he hyperextended in the Eastern Conference Finals. What have been your overall impressions so far of the finals? How do you like this matchup? Are you digging the sort of fresh blood, the new faces we're seeing in the finals this year?
Yeah, I like it a lot. As you know, I wrote an entire feature on that subject. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I quite enjoy it. Mm-hmm. I have to say, a chase down block, I think, is one of my favorite things. I think it might actually be my favorite thing now in basketball. Yeah, I'm mm-hmm. comfortable saying that. I think because it's like it's the most emphatic. It's the most emphatic move. It's real vengeance, but there's also,
yep.
I think it's just every element I love about basketball is involved in a chase down block. You know, the athleticism, mm-hmm. speed, jumping, revenge. So I really like that.
There's an element there's of surprise to it as well.
Yeah, shock like and awe.
Ambush almost.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, man, I love a chase down block. And I thought that was kind of nice. Literally no one will say this, but you know, when people are complaining, oh, I miss LeBron, mostly Skip Bayless, I miss LeBron. Also, if no one has seen, like, it took me a couple days to see that tweet, but Skip mm. Bayless just tweeted, I miss LeBron, that's it. And I yeah. it was like a wolf yeah. howling. It was like a lone wolf howling off in the distance. It was so mournful. It was so, I legitimately felt sad for him for one brief moment.
Yeah.
Anyway. But yeah, for people that are missing LeBron, I thought that was a nice ode to him in like a roundabout mm-hmm. way.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a really good point. And yeah, your favorite thing is chase down blocks in basketball. My favorite thing in basketball is when a person who's 6 feet tall and is the smallest person on the floor just completely takes over a game. Of course, this comes from almost a decade of watching Kyle Lowry play for my favorite team, but Chris Paul did that very much in game one as well. It is just so, so fun to see Chris Paul decide, oh, it's my turn to hit all these mid-range shots and win this game for my team. It's a true delight. And we saw that in game one. We've seen it all throughout these playoffs as well. And so let's take a moment here to appreciate all that Chris Paul is, Katie. It's been, his career is so fascinating. It, you know, he comes in as this sort of, you know, people forget how like much of an athletic sort of marvel he was when he first came into the league, where he was like dunking as a 5'11", 6' dude and was just like an entirely different player than he is today. Obviously, 16 years of aging will do that to you. And when he came in at 21 or whatever it was, or 20, he was just like unstoppable because of his athleticism. And it was like basically unlike anything we've really seen from a guard of that size. And then it's just a lot of ups and downs. It's the displacement with the Hornets and moving to OKC for a bit. You've got the playoff disappointments with the Hornets in those early days and those pretty fun teams with like David West and Tyson Chandler. You move through the Clippers, the Rockets, the Thunder, the Suns. Like, it's just been a very interesting and kind of unprecedented road for Chris Paul. And yeah, we should probably take some time to talk about how cool it is that we're finally seeing him in a finals. You know, what's your sort of initial impression thinking about Chris Paul making the finals? Like, he makes the finals, you see him play in game one. Like, what's going through your head watching him kind of seize that stage for the first time and, you know, really kind of throw a lot of bogus narratives about him being like a choker or a playoff failure or whatever it is kind of out the window in game one against the Bucks?
Honestly, I wasn't. I mean, I don't think any of those things, and I never really did.
Yeah, I think he's had a real rough
string of luck, like from even like these playoffs. And if you go back and just, you know, any appearance he's had, and the times that he's felt he's blown it, which we'll get to, but like most notably, I think on the Clippers in some of those series, like he took it on fully. You know, he took full responsibility. He said, "All that's on me." So I think for someone who's had like a really long and difficult road to get here and has, you know, never, I don't think he's ever, people say like, oh, players never quit. But I don't really think Chris Paul ever has quit because he's like toiled for a long time. If not in weird relegated obscurity due to people not liking him, you know, then outright vehemence when people are just like, I hate him. There's something about him that rubs quite a lot of people the wrong way. And I hope through these playoffs and this whole season with the Suns, getting to see a more joyful leader, like Chris Paul, who's a leader and who's enjoying mm-hmm. that role, I think, and actually learning, like adapting his game to play at a different speed and with a different style because he's got such a young cohort around him. I think that adaptability also has deep shades of Kyle Lowry, so I quite enjoy it. But I think, I don't want to say relief because he's not there yet, but it is just a sense of deservedness. And I don't know, I was mostly happy. Just extremely happy to watch him there. But a couple times I will say, I don't know if this was both, like there was a couple of sloppy, weird turnovers and just like out of bound balls and like missed passes. Like Chris Paul was doing some of those, but like, so were the Bucks. And I was kind of like, oh, this is cute. Like, are both of these guys, like this team's like getting their nerves out a bit for being on this stage?
Yeah. That's a good point. I didn't really think about their sort of newness to it all. I don't think there is a single player in the finals who has won a championship before, maybe even been to the finals before, which is kind of crazy. The thing that it really just like punched me in the gut was when Chris Paul and DeAndre Ayton kind of had a moment that they caught in the cameras, like the close-up bench cameras, where like Chris Paul just looks so freaking proud. And like, you know, if you contrast that with earlier parts of this season, even, you know, obviously we know he's kind of always been demonstrative and has yelled at guys and hasn't been afraid to in years past. But even early as this season, like in the first early going, you know, he would get frustrated with Ayton and kind of do the stern talking to type of thing. And now it's just like a beaming pride and sort of an acceptance that, you know, yeah, I'm not playing with vets who are always going to be like, you know, thinking the same as me. And no one really, I think he's maybe realized in a weird way that, you know, he's always been one of the smartest players alive. And maybe there's some acceptance now that, you know, not everybody is going to be on my level of seeing the game and everything like that. And that's okay. It's not like everybody needs to have my sort of basketball computer brain. And he's kind of learned to accept that. And I think just like the youth of the Suns really seems to have kind of refreshed him in a lot of ways. And that kind of started last year with the Thunder, I think, as well, when they had that surprisingly successful season with him, with a lot of young dudes kind of around him getting their first shot at any sort of relevance. It's been quite the stark evolution for him. And I think he deserves a lot of credit for that. Like, I think a big reason, it's not just the fact that he's made the finals. It's kind of the manner in which he's made the final that kind of seems to be turning long held anti Chris Paul opinions into pro Chris Paul opinions. And he deserves a ton of credit for evolving and kind of realizing, okay, maybe I can't scream at my teammates all the time and get the results I want. Maybe I need to live with some failure and live with some growing pains and we'll be better for it at the end. And it's just a fascinating arc for him and how his sort of career is now coalesced to this point where I think you would certainly say the Suns are favored to win this series right now. They're up 1-0. Giannis is in some state of not 100%, and the Suns are very healthy and very freaking good because of Chris Paul in a lot of ways. It's just a cool ass arc. And I don't know, I'm trying to think of like anyone else who's had an arc like this. It really, like maybe Dirk, but even then, that wasn't something that played out over the course of a decade and a half. Like, does anyone come to mind for you, Katie, as people who have kind of gone through the similar ups and downs, or is it made that much more special because this is kind of its own thing?
Like Melo in a different way, maybe.
Yeah.
and I think Melo of more of like, I mean, he's the same as Paul in the sense that he's bounced around to a lot of teams. Obviously, they're really different kinds of players. Sure. But in terms of players on that stage, I tried to actually go and look up, like, it's a tough thing to try and like Google, because like trying to figure out also just the words to plug in, and then everything is so mean. I found this one Bleacher Report story, and it was like 10 players who will never win an NBA title. Oh, and like Marc Gasol was on there. Was that the one you screen
cap with Marc Gasol? Yeah.
Yeah, and Dwight Howard was on there, and like a couple other guys who I think have since won. Andre Iguodala was on there, which to me, it was like, all right, this obviously didn't age well. It was also extremely mean, like called Marc Gasol fat and that he liked Taco Bell too much. Like, get a grip. Anyway, I think like it shows also like it's difficult. It's very difficult to predict things, especially in a league where players now have a real prolonged arc to their careers, technically past what we would have once probably have called their prime, you know, whether that's because they go on to be role players or vets or just, you know, come to take up different roles on teams, or because they're going to be on like a super team that LeBron makes, which is usually stocked with his old friends. but yeah, I think I just wanted to touch quickly on your DeAndre Ayton thing, because him and Booker, I think all those like young guys have said in some capacity, especially in the in their pressers leading up to the finals, how much they value Chris Paul because they've never played as they all feel that they have never played as well as they have this season because of how hard he's pushed them. So I think, well, yeah, he was definitely, you know, in their ears at the beginning of the season. And maybe they're just, I think he'll continue to be in their ears. I'm sure we'll see it in the finals. Obviously, they're gelling much, much more than they were at the start. But I think that's something, you know, like a testament to Paul, too, is how much he pushes other players, but he's not the kind of player who, like, he's pushing himself first, you know? So I think when we look at other players who maybe have had the kind of longevity he's had in the league, I don't know that there's anyone who I would say has the work ethic of Paul and hasn't yet been to the finals. And that's probably why, one of the reasons why this seems so, you know, like, just overdue.
Yeah, it is. You know, a lot of these guys, it typically is in that sort of heat of their prime where they kind of break through the demons, right? Like, we're even seeing with Giannis right now, right? Like, he's right in the middle of his apex, and you would expect him at some point after years of falling just short to burst through. It's kind of the thing that we never learn about sort of transcendent players. You know, LeBron, oh, LeBron's a choker, can't win. Oh, he's only in year five? Oh, year six, he wins a title. Oh, okay, cool. He breaks through. It's just sort of the arc that most of these guys go on. And, you know, maybe Chris Paul is, actually, I don't even think this is true. I think some people would argue he's not quite of that sort of, you know, transcendent sort of generational star tier. I think that's wrong. I think he's, you know, he's the best point guard I've ever watched play basketball. You know, Steph Curry maybe is the other, you know, he's certainly a generational type talent. And I think because, like you said, you know, the career is prolonged now and his prime, his post prime is kind of extended many years here. Like, I would say he was even kind of like, quote unquote, post prime, even with the Rockets. You know, he was in his 30s and all that. You know, maybe we need to sort of recalibrate our expectations of when primes end based on sports science and things like that. But, you know, the way he kind of found this solace afterwards. Like, even like I said, with Dirk, he was very much still in his prime, or maybe the tail end of his prime when he won the title and kind of broke through there. And that's like really the only corollary I can think of, a guy who was sort of viewed as a playoff choker until he wasn't. And it's just nice. I'm very glad. I was worried for a long time that we weren't going to get this with Chris Paul, and that he was always going to kind of remain this sort of oddly hated figure in NBA history, you know, because of the ref complaining or whatever, or mostly due to him being the smartest guy in the room and making sure people know about it. Like, that has always been sort of an unwarranted reputation, I think, and I'm glad that things are kind of finally coming through, and, you know, people are jumping on the bandwagon. It's beautiful. Do you have, like, before, like, I think, like, Suns Chris Paul is very much, like, top of the pops for me in terms of, like, favorite Chris Pauls, just because of everything we've seen, even though he's been probably non-Kyle Lowry division my favorite basketball player to watch for the last 10 years in the NBA. You know, this has been kind of the peak of it. But do you have a favorite rendition of Chris Paul that you kind of go back and think of, that maybe you're thinking about now as he's at this point in the finals?
Yeah, I really wish the, like, Lob City, mayor of Lob City, Chris Paul, could have done this. Yeah. Because I did. That was, to me, the last time the Clippers were also fairly likable. I mean, I think they were very mm-hmm. hated, but I think they were likable in the sense that they were infused with so much personality. And they all, the team had more of a personality and dynamic than it does now. I mean, you could say that it's more talented now than it was then, but I think there sure. was a real sense of gratitude. You know, Blake Griffin said when Chris Paul got there, he felt like he really put them on the map, you know, that they were yeah. a contender then, which when you think about it is kind of sad, because at that point, Blake Griffin was also considered just like this phenomenal, like, behemoth of a player, right? And had, like, all this time and, like, nothing but hope in front of him. And I think DeAndre Jordan was kind of the same. And I think it's interesting that they saw Chris Paul, who at that point was also still, you know, at the beginning, like, of his career, as this person who would crystallize something for them, which I think goes to, like, speak very well towards Paul in general. But yeah, I do wish, like, we'll go through the every era, but I think that era and iteration, I wish could have seen this kind of success. I understand why it didn't. It was very close at yeah. times, though. So I don't know. Maybe
they
I
were
don't.
So close.
Yeah, there's sometimes where it's just like, you know, what it takes. I think I understand a lot better. And sometimes now I look back on that Raptor season and I'm like, geez, if one of these things just went a little wrong, it never would have happened. Because when you look at all the things that have to add up, right? It yeah. almost, it feels impossible. Like, retrospectively, it always feels impossible that any title ever happened for any team. So, you know, while those were close, yeah, it would have been nice to see him get one there. Only on the Rockets, because of, like, I wish he could have just, and Harden would have never taken it this way, but they did not like each other towards the end, even though,
yeah,
like, Chris Paul was playing some of the best basketball in his career, but it was like angry revenge basketball almost. I wish he could have yeah. helped them win the title just so he could have been like, I did that for you, and then have left. But he probably wouldn't have gotten yeah. traded if that happened. So who knows?
No. I mean, maybe they would have hated each other enough and would have said, hey, we did what we were supposed to do. Bye-bye. And that would have happened the same way anyway. But yeah, that those Clippers era teams were so fun. And I don't understand. Like, I guess it's because they were, like, deemed as, like, complainers, and they had some hilarious losses that people kind of laughed at, and maybe J.J. Redick being on the team didn't help matters much because he's a detestable figure in a lot of ways. But, you know, I never really understood the sort of scorn those teams received. And, you know, in theory, you'd think, oh, a team that dunks a bunch and plays cool-ass basketball? Okay, sure, that sounds awesome. And, like, I think they were sort of beloved in those first couple of years, but then it kind of soured and the playoff losses mounted and they became kind of more bitter with each other, and it just kind of seemed unhinged by the time it was over. And even though you could kind of explain away a lot of their later losses through injury, I know Blake Griffin was hurt one year, Chris Paul, like, breaks his finger on CJ McCollum's jersey and that derails one of their playoff runs, and, like, all of them were understandable, but it kind of got to a point where it was like, all right, I guess we're just moving on from this because, you know, it's time. But those teams, I think, never got the love they kind of deserved. As I mean, they're one of the most famous teams of the last 10 years, I think, without question, one of the most sort of recognizable teams. And they were damn close. They weren't just some sort of gimmicky dunk show. They were a team that beat the defending champion Spurs in 2015. And like maybe my favorite non-Raptors playoff game of all time, that game seven against the Spurs where Chris Paul hits that game winner. And it was like, okay, this is happening. Like he's going to have his year. Like things are lining up here. LeBron's in his first year with the Cavs and that team is looking weird. And Kevin Love's hurt in the first round. And you know, what's going to go on there? It seemed like maybe things were sort of trending the way they have this year with Chris Paul, where everything's kind of come up Chris Paul. Obviously it didn't work out. You had the Josh Smith, Corey Brewer game in the second round of that series and things go to shit. But that again, it wasn't a Chris Paul thing, even though the blame was kind of heaped upon him. He's a remarkable player. I'm also wondering, like Katie, thinking about players now who are maybe at an earlier phase in their career, sort of akin to what Chris Paul was with the Clippers or with the Hornets or whatever it might be, who were kind of at risk of missing out on and fully appreciating, because I feel like lots of people, not me, or I don't think you, people who have appreciated Chris Paul the whole time, like I think lots of folks are kind of like new Chris Paul acolytes this year, are maybe sort of regretting not appreciating him when they had the chance to, back when he was continually awesome for a long, long time. Is there anyone in the league right now who you kind of look at as like that next person that maybe is being underappreciated in their time, and it won't be until some sort of later good fortune that it kind of gets turned around, and then again the whole sort of cycle of regret of not appreciating the guy when they were at their power, peak of their powers, might come back to roost?
Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan. Like earnestly, and I also recognize my bias. First though, I do want to say, because I don't want to be doxxed or something, but I wasn't always a Chris Paul supporter. I think I liked him on that Clippers team, though I still found him incredibly annoying at times. It took me a while to come around to his certain brand of bossiness and his work ethic. And I do think seeing him as a point guard, and this is really weird because, you know, I love point guards that are so embroiled in their own weird, unique personalities. Like they're such a type, you know, and most of my favorite players who are extreme types and usually like pretty polarizing, Russell Westbrook, Kyle Lowry, Chris Paul now, like they're all extreme types, you know? And I love them for that because their personalities are just themselves, both on and off court. And like, that's what makes them so good and such weird genius sponges. So yeah, it took me a minute. And I have to say, honestly, it was probably seeing him in Houston. I think there was a little bit of sympathy when he got moved from the Clippers, just because of the way that team seemed like they had rebought in with Blake Griffin, and then everything just fell apart and everybody got shipped out, and he was sort of the last piece to leave or get traded in that sense. Also, I felt pretty bad for him. And then with the Rockets, he just felt a little bit relegated, you know, and really undervalued and appreciated. So I felt for him there. And I think that's where it turned around for me. But now, I mean, this is just me being hopeful perhaps, but I do think that we're more in an era where people have widened their scope of appreciation and what they value in a player or how they even choose a favorite player. And I think the way that, you know, there's so many different kinds of basketball that get played now, even within a season, and trends and stuff like that. And it's not so much relegated to like, you must play this one type of basketball, you know, and that's what I think I love so much about these playoffs, is all these young players kind of coming to the fore and pushing that forward and showing that like, yeah, this doesn't, and none of this like negates, like it doesn't mean like LeBron's over, like, you know, it doesn't mean that or like Chris Paul, because he's within that earlier era too. I think it's just this wider coalescence of everyone all together, which I like it because it's like, I don't know, with basketball, I do feel like more is more. But yeah, I mean, Grant, like I think DeMar DeRozan, Kyle Lowry definitely gets his appreciation from the Raptors fan base, but I think DeMar DeRozan, I saw flashes of it this season. People kind of being like, wow, I never knew. Like, did anyone know Damar was this good? And like, yeah, man. Like, yeah, always.
He rocks. But just because he doesn't shoot threes doesn't mean he doesn't own. Yeah.
Yeah. And I sincerely hope he gets a title.
Yeah. I think there's been in the last couple of years, and maybe this is just sort of my thinking, and honestly, you know, working with you, Katie, has been a big part of my sort of growing appreciation of basketball and welcoming all comers as opposed to just guys who have good efficiency. And I think there's been a bit of a sort of pushback to the sort of, you know, the salary capification of the NBA and the transactions and like the maximizing efficiency and all that, like viewing humans as assets. Like, I think that had its real heyday in like the mid 2010s. And I feel like that's sort of being rebuffed by a lot of folks now. And we are seeing a sort of wider appreciation of dudes. And, you know, Devin Booker was viewed as, and maybe this is just because they're winning now, but, you know, he was viewed as this like, oh, good stats, bad team. I think it was Colin McGowan that made this point on Twitter last week. Like, hopefully that whole sort of notion is dying out a little bit because, you know, everything, there's lots of context that goes into teams being bad and not winning games. And it doesn't just have to be tied to the best player. And it honestly is kind of like a thing that I really grew to detest when I was a big hockey fan is like in hockey, it's always like, oh, it's the best player's fault when the team loses, despite there being 24 dudes on a team. And I think that's kind of been a thing with, you know, good players on bad teams in recent years. And hopefully that's kind of changing. And yeah, I would hope that we won't have a Chris Paul 16 years from now who we're looking at and saying, damn, we did not appreciate that dude enough before he got to this sort of apex. And, you know, it feels like, you know, I don't really know if there's a candidate right now. Maybe it's like Rudy Gobert. Maybe in 10 years we're looking at Rudy Gobert winning a title and thinking, damn, we should have appreciated Rudy Gobert. I don't think that's going to happen because he's kind of his own different animal. But, you know, I think, for example, like I got like Karl Anthony Towns, for example. You know, I think he kind of fits this profile where, yeah, it hasn't been super successful early on, you know, fits and starts. They make one playoff run. He's very clearly like a transcendent talent. It's just not quite lined up for lots of different reasons. I wonder if 5-6 years from now, we kind of are looking at Karl Anthony Towns as one of the best players alive and thinking, man, we really should have kind of bought in those first 6 years. But even then, I feel like maybe he's not quite as derided as LeBron was or other first overall picks in previous decades who weren't quite, you know, at the peak of their powers in their first contract or first two contracts. And it took until deeper in their careers to kind of reach that success. I would hope that's going to be the case at least, and that we don't have another Chris Paul who goes this long without the full appreciation of everybody who watches the sport. Do you have any other sort of Chris Paul thoughts? But, you know, we haven't really talked about the Pelicans era all that much. You know, that's a earlier time in my sort of basketball fandom. I don't have a ton of recollection outside of watching highlights and catching the odd game and things like that. And, you know, I think I attended a Raptors Hornets game once and was amazed by Chris Paul then. You know, there's that era. There's obviously like the defunct trade to the Lakers, which obviously would have changed everything. What's your sort of, as the rain comes down in the background?
Yeah, I was going to say, it's like torrential. Torrential yeah, downpour.
Sounds lovely.
I know I'm zoning out a little bit. yeah. I do.
I was just saying words while the rain was happening and forgetting where my sentence was.
So, which is gorgeous. Paul, we should have really set a monologue against this. Anyway, but no, I think the Hornets era, like you, yeah, a little bit earlier, like for me in my fandom. But I think, you know, going back to this and having a newfound appreciation for it. Well, first of all, he came into the league at a place where, like at a time where, even that was a time of upheaval, right? Like the team's displaced sure. in his draft year because of Hurricane Katrina. They play in OKC, you know? And I think one of the other things that stood out to me was he had a couple back-to-back injuries after, like, I should mention too, like he gets there, they start making the playoffs, you know, like it's like a really hopeful time of change for them. And then Byron Scott gets fired, and that's like 2009, and the Hornets missed the playoffs because Paul was injured that year too. But around that time, he started to voice basically like his disdain or being upset of the fact that Scott was fired. And I think that and also that Paul wasn't consulted was such a big team decision, and he got a ton of flack for it. And I think it is wild because that was only 12 years ago. But when you think of the era we're in now and where we expect and anticipate stars, especially team leaders, to give their two cents, you know, whether or not those thoughts are actually considered by team ownership is obviously another thing completely. But that Paul was a pioneer in a sense, I think, of being a relatively young player at the time and expressing that kind of doubt and demanding that kind of input with a team. I don't know. I just think that there are shades of that as when you see now, like, okay, it makes sense that he's the head of the NBPA. It makes sense that he kind of grew into, and because he never really thought he was out of place doing it. And I think when we talk about player autonomy, Paul still gets the short end of the stick because people think he's, quote, annoying or like bossy, right? But this obviously for him is something deeper.
Yeah. I'm endlessly fascinated by Chris Paul. I look forward to the many, many sort of
and that he bought suits for everyone in OKC in December of that season. And I think that, like, that seems like a gloss over year, unfortunately. I did think it was going to be a little bit more long lasting, but he took the whole team out for dinner the summer that he was traded. He really bought in. He bought them all beautiful suits. He even had, like, Steven Adams was like, I haven't worn shoes in so long. But he put shoes on to wear the suit that Chris Paul got him. And I think, you know, we've talked about this before too, but that OKC team to me was, I don't know what's going to happen now with Presti, but
yeah,
to me, they seemed a few years away from what the Suns team is now. So Chris Paul just kind of got shuffled into a position where he was immediately, you know, activated. Mm-hmm. But I think he wanted to grow that OKC group to what the Suns group is now. And I think he wanted to be a part of that. So I'm glad it sucks that he didn't get to do it there. I'm glad that he's doing it now.
Yeah, I think the retrospectives on Chris Paul should absolutely highlight that OKC season. And I think we'll look back at it 10 years from now as like a really cool pivot point for his career, where like the bitterness of the Rockets experiment sort of lands him in OKC. And it seems like, okay, maybe this is just where his career goes to end. And, you know, he's viewed as this sort of odious albatross contract and all that shit. And for him to kind of embrace that situation, which wasn't exactly like ideal, it was pretty rough. And, you know, he's replacing a franchise icon in Russell Westbrook. And for him to kind of just, it seemed like that sort of recentered him in a lot of ways, you know, from the outside, at least. I'm not sure, obviously, don't want to speak for him or anything like that, but it did seem like, you know, he softened in a lot of ways from the things that sort of drove people nuts about him early in his career. And I don't think the Sun season happens the way it has if he doesn't have that sort of year of sort of learning, relearning the ropes of leadership in a lot of ways, right? Like, if it's just Rockets to Suns as a straight move, I wonder if maybe he's not quite ready for what he's had on his plate this year, kind of leading the Sun squad along. It's an interesting sort of hypothetical, but certainly that OKC season I'm going to remember fondly, and we'll laugh at OKC forever for breaking up a team that could have been the Suns. I'll say it forever. They could have been the Suns. Katie, that feels like a good place to leave the Chris Paul Power Hour off. We're going to move into the segment we're trying out this week, where it's all about literature. That's coming up in just 1 second here on the podcast. All right, we've reached the segment we're trying out this week here on the podcast, and this one is inspired by a tweet that you put out yesterday, actually, Katie, with, of course, the viral sensation that is Devin Booker's water bottle in game one of the NBA Finals that reads simply "Book" in large block letters on the bottle. Your tweet, of course, was "When all your Toronto library holds come in at once." And
happens to me so much. I got to shout out Dan Reynolds, because I was like, I sent that and I was like, fuck, I'm really chumping the waters for him, because every time we ever talk about that, he's like, Katie, you can just suspend your holds. And it's like, Reynolds, I know. Sometimes I just forget, or sometimes they come in extremely out of order. It's like, oh, I'm 178th out of 800 people in the queue. And then the book comes. I don't know.
Well, yeah, I'm very happy for you whenever your holds come in, Katie. I am not as much a voracious reader as you are. I try to be, but I'm very bad. I can't get into the habit, and I often play video games instead. But either way, books are the theme of this week's segment we're trying out this week. We're going to go through the starting fives of each the Suns and Bucks in the NBA Finals and try to find a book, a piece of reading for each of the players in said starting fives to maybe have to guide them through their finals experience. These guys all come from different backgrounds, different experiences. They have different roles and positions to assume on their own teams. And I think it's an interesting little exercise. So, Katie, we're going to run through. We'll start with the Suns, shall we? The Devin Booker. Let's start with Devin Booker himself, the book man himself. By the way, just so everybody knows for the visual, in our rundown, I do have Book Club, the name of the segment that we're doing, stylized, where the book kind of looks like the book on the... It's a nice little touch, I thought. But anyway, Katie, Devin Booker, what book do you think he should be looking at? What type of book should he be looking at first? I guess we can whittle it down from there to sort of guide him through his first NBA Finals experience.
Yeah, like I want him to read something good, but I feel like he wants to read a graphic novel. Don't you?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, potentially. Something with butts, probably.
But yeah, actually, I should say, though, his GF, Kendall Jenner, actually is a big fan of contemporary, like ultra contemporary, almost autofiction, out of the mainstream literature. Mm-hmm. She's a good reader. Mm-hmm. She really like, I'm always surprised when I'm like, oh, she's reading that. That's cool. But I don't know that, again, I don't know if that's rubbing off on Booker.
I'm
trying to think of... I also don't know that much. This is a bad place to start because I don't know that many big graphic novels.
Sure, sure.
Do you?
Not really, no. I wasn't going to go graphic novel, actually, with my suggestion. I was going to go sort of more of like a coming of age novel, perhaps. You know, the character kind of grows up over the course of the book. Particularly, I'm kind of envisioning Ponyboy from The Outsiders as my Devin Booker stand-in. You know, like he's kind of thrust into a very... you know, new and stressful world. You know, his parents are killed early on. Obviously, that's not quite as morbid in real life for Devin Booker, but, you know, he's thrust into, oh, he's in the finals now all of a sudden after years of kind of just being a kid, hanging out, being a just a regular old, you know, early in the career, making your way. And then it's just so quickly thrust upon him. It does kind of feel like Ponyboy quickly finding himself in the middle of a turf war. But maybe that's me being too much of a simpleton. Do you have a better suggestion? Have you come up with a different graphic novel, perhaps, that he might go with?
No, I don't have a graphic novel. I'm actually going to pick It by Stephen King because that book is a tome. It's so long. Not that there is a supernatural like demon or extraterrestrial force haunting Booker, but I do think in the sense that he has... seemingly fought against something for so long now to get here. And it seems to be something internalized, you know, and it's taken on a lot of different iterations, whether that's personal disappointment, changes in teammates, you know, changes in team makeup, whatever. And Stephen King like always loves, though it doesn't take place in the desert, but like,
yeah.
Stephen King loves to write about some freakiness in the desert. So that could fit for me.
Yeah. let's go with It. I think that's a good one. We'll move on to Chris Paul. What's Chris Paul reading to get himself through the finals, Katie?
Maybe Moby Dick, because he's this is his white whale.
I was going to say the exact same thing, Katie.
There we go.
We've landed on it. It's perfect. It's a long... slog of a quest, plenty of iterations. It's I think this is a wonderful, wonderful selection. I don't think really there's anything else even to say on it, so we can move on. Chris Paul, Moby Dick, obvious. Mikal Bridges, Katie. Mikal Bridges.
So I guess I want to say more like what, contemporary literature? What do you think?
This is a tricky one. You know, there's... I'm trying to think of books where maybe there's like a sort of unforeseen path that develops for a character. Because Mikal Bridges like was not really even supposed to be in Phoenix on draft night, if you remember. He was drafted by the Sixers. His mom worked for the Sixers. It seemed like, oh, he's just going to be on the Sixers. He's going to be one of the crowning jewels of the process. And then he gets traded for Zaire Smith and becomes a son, kind of out of nowhere. And he's thrust into this sort of new reality that was not previously anticipated. And I don't know if there's a book that comes to mind that off the top of my head that kind of fits that description. Mm-hmm. But what do you think?
What, where he's end, like he's ended some, wow, I can't speak. Ended up somewhere where he didn't think he would be?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm. I have another suggestion as well.
Okay.
My grade 11 English days, or grade 12 English days.
Okay.
Did you ever read Fifth Business?
No.
By Robertson Davies? So it's a sort of tale about this sort of mostly unassuming character named Dunstan Ramsey. He sort of has like a very traumatic youthful experience where he causes someone harm, but he really is not ever sort of the main character of the book.
Okay.
The idea of the Fifth Business is like a stage term. It's for like someone who's part of the conversation, is there, but is not really the hero, the heroine, the antagonist, whatever. They're just kind of there helping the story move along. And those roles can, of course, have enormous impacts. And so I think for me, that's where Mikal Bridges comes here. He's not the key figure on the Suns or in this series, but everything he does kind of helps move the action along in the rest of the series, particularly for the Suns. Does that make sense to you?
It does, but I thought more about it, and I think Pride and Prejudice fits because that's a story where it's more about what, like, the main character, she really sees herself outside of all the kind of drama embroiling her family and the way that it's kind of moving along. She, to a sense, like, avoids certain things, you know, her romantic attractions, what she's doing in her own life, the trajectory that she wants to take. And she's sort of forced pretty abruptly to address those things in the culmination of the novel. And it puts her in a place where she is even extremely shocked to the core by herself. She's like, wow, I never could have seen this coming. I never could have seen this happening in my wildest dream. And look how happy I am. And everything has worked out. So, yeah, to me,
I like that. Yeah.
That fits.
I hated Fifth Business. So, yeah, let's go Pride and Prejudice.
Excellent.
Yeah. Let's move on to Jay Crowder, lining up across in the finals again for the second year in a row, tormenting Giannis Antetokounmpo again for the second year in a row as well. What do you got for Jay Crowder and the book that fits his finals experience?
I feel like, I don't know why I'm leaning toward like sci-fi.
Sure.
But I am.
Are you going for a sequel because it's a second straight finals? Is that part of the calculus here?
No. No. Are you?
I'm having trouble finding one, honestly. So I haven't quite landed on that yet. But yeah.
A second straight finals. I don't know. A part of me was like, should this just be like a book about fighting? Like...
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing.
Is this just fucking Fight Club or something? But then I don't really think the, like, the quote lesson of Fight Club, you know, really fits.
Yeah. I'm just wondering, is there like any sort of, is he reading like a tactics book on fighting? Like The Way of the Fight by George St. Pierre.
The Art of
just
War?
Like, how am I going
Maybe
to
the
approach?
Art of War.
Yeah, Art of War 2. Yeah, just like any sort of how he's approaching the matchup with Giannis Antetokounmpo.
The
man
Hunger
who's
Games.
Like a foot taller than him. Yeah, I think what was the one you had before
the Art of War?
Yeah, I think that. Yeah, I think Art of War seems like some Jay Crowder ass shit. Okay. We'll go with that.
That's true. I suppose it could be pretty meditative.
Yeah, yeah. We move on to DeAndre Ayton, the final member of the Suns starting five. I have my selection. I'll turn it over to you though, if you have something.
No,
you wanna throw
tell
in
me
here.
What it is.
So I think it's just sort of continued reading for, for DeAndre Ayton? Because I think he's probably been reading this book. He's had it on his bedstand all season long since Chris Paul arrived. I think he's reading by Susan F. Benjamin, Perfect Phrases for Dealing with Difficult People. And just continuing his schooling in how to sort of work and collaborate with Chris Paul, who, you know, maybe the finals bring some of that ornery nature out. I'm not sure. But it's just the thing that I think DeAndre Ayton's been kind of reading a chapter of before bed every single night since the start of the year. And it's worked pretty well, as it turns out. Do you have another selection? Or are we
that
going
makes
with
sense.
Perfect Phrases for Difficult People?
Yeah, yeah. Right, I like perfect. That.
We move on to the Milwaukee Bucks. Katie, we'll start with Giannis Antetokounmpo. What is Giannis reading?
I think we got to go with a classic here.
Okay.
Would you agree?
Sure, yeah, that works for me. Something big title, why not?
I'm sorry to do this because I know that he doesn't. There's some like, I know that Greek people love to claim him now, but I don't know that they're necessarily deserving of it because of the way he and his family were treated. But I also know he's quite loyal to his Greek, adoptive Greek heritage himself. So I'm going to lean on what Giannis feels about that. Mm-hmm. Even though I might have my hesitations, but I feel like perhaps the Odyssey.
Oh,
I'd say the Odyssey and the Iliad back to back, classic as they come.
Just really, you know, getting in the like, muck during the finals. Yeah, like game film. Yeah. No,
well, one is
do
just
it.
Like this takes forever. The Odyssey. Oh, like that's it's very aptly titled. You know, yeah, like can you find the least direct way to get somewhere? You can find it in the Odyssey. The Iliad, a little bit more triumphant, you know?
Sure.
But we explore, you know, we've got humanity, compassion, survival. So
yeah,
I feel like it fits.
I can't disagree with that. I think you've nailed it here, Katie. So we'll move on to Drew Holiday, a very interesting character in these finals. What do you have your Drew Holiday selection?
I'm just like thinking of books about like running, like speed. Like if Speed, one of my favorite films, was a book, then I would pick that. But it's not. Mm-hmm. So maybe like I'm literally looking at books about running. Mm-hmm. I should just go ask Dylan because he reads books about running because he's a big runner.
Yeah.
Here we go. Endure. Mind, body, and the curiously elastic limits of human performance. Drew Holiday is extremely fast, and that's the reason I think why this is like the most basic observation and analysis, but I think that's why the Bucks wanted and needed him, and it's finally working out for them. But yeah. I also think he's like, how can I make myself faster?
That's a good one. I've been trying to shoehorn in somewhere the book I read while I was at the cottage over the weekend, because it's the most recent book I've read. I haven't done a ton of reading in the last year plus, but I read Treasure Island while at the cottage over the weekend. Let me just sort of work the roundabout way here and talk myself through the roles and where Drew Holiday fits into the tale. I'm thinking Drew Holiday's Jim Hawkins here. He is the antagonist of the tale. Sorry, the protagonist of the tale. And then it's sort of a longer, it's not just his Bucks experience that I'm kind of lumping in here. I'm sort of lumping in the Pelicans experience as well. So let's say his, even before that, the Sixers are his time at the inn, sort of serving Billy Bones and learning about the tales of the sea on this team that was floundering and not really going anywhere. Then he goes to the Pelicans and it's exciting. It's new. There's an adventure, and charming Long John Silver Davis comes along, and Anthony Davis sort of takes him under his wing. And it's like, Jim boy, we're going to do this together. We're going to become the greatest C duo there ever was. And then, you know, Long John Silver kind of turns on the group, not kind of, very much turns on the group. And I guess in this context, like Rich Paul is Israel Hands and some of the other members of the crew who go rogue and pull the mutiny. And then Drew Holiday, in his escape to Milwaukee, is sort of performing his, you know, his circumnavigation of the island in the dinghy, and the sort of cutting of the anchor of the ship, and the treachery that leads Long John Silver into some desperation where he needs to barter for the map and all of this stuff. Obviously, things that end up not going so hot for Long John Silver. Obviously, I guess, you know, that's where the comparison falls apart, because the Anthony Davis, Long John Silver just won the title. But, you know, I'm finding Drew Holiday, the sort of Bucks experience, is Jim Hawkins after the experience of Treasure Island, where he's just kind of setting sail across the seas and he's got this sort of new lease on life. This might be a way too much of a reach, but I wanted to shoehorn that book in because it's fresh in my mind.
Pirates, eh? Sure.
Yeah, he also did adopt the pirate headband, which is also an important thing here.
Why is it a pirate headband?
Well, that was, I think, sort of the, you know, it looked like pirate headbands when he had the thing going on. It looked like he could walk around with a dagger in his mouth while he had that long flowing headband back before it was outlawed by the league. Maybe I'm wrong, but okay. I thought that was okay. Kind of the nomenclature we gave to those headbands.
Sure, the Let's pirate move on, headband. Shall we?
Yeah.
To me, because it could at any point in the game slip down his face and maybe cover one of his eyes.
Yeah. Oh, beautiful. Yeah. All right. Well, Drew Holiday, Treasure Island. Go read it. We move on to Chris Middleton. A bit of a, I don't know, strange character to kind of pin down. Secondary character in a lot of ways. What's your read on Chris Middleton here and what he should be reading?
Yeah, I want him to read. This is a great book. And I think people don't think it's a great book because it does always get recommended as a great book. And it's like become a little bit twee, but I don't think that at all. 100 Years of Solitude by Gabriel Garcia Marquez.
Okay.
A gorgeous, really weird book. Literally about like, I don't know, it's raining really hard again. So I'll try and make it's this lovely. As soothing
what,
as I
what
can.
What better thing to do on a rainy day than talk about books? Come on. This is perfect.
It's true. I'm like, I want to go read after this. Anyway, it tells the story of a family over 100 years, and it is kind of considered one of the leaders in the genre magic realism, which is where you blend mm-hmm. historical fiction with basically fantasy. But Marquez sure. does it extremely well and like very lyrically, but it's like a lot about struggle and people kind of wanting, like going through conflict, oscillating between wanting to be alone, but also really wanting to be loved and part of something. And I think Middleton for so long has been this kind of solitary character who hasn't really gotten his due. I am guilty of this, but to see him kind of come alive in these playoffs and really carry his team. Also, the Bucks, like a real solitary franchise, let's be honest. You know, they love the struggle. They love being like, we're loners in this. We're out here on our own, driving Harleys on the highway. I guess that's their fan base. But anyway, I think also I could just see him. I could just see Middleton reading this and just getting really lost in it.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's a great call. I don't have a better option than that. So we're going with 100 Years of Solitude for Chris Middleton. We move on to PJ Tucker, a fascinating story for
Devil
him.
Devil Wears Prada. I've never read the book, but people sure. seem to like it. And we know he yeah. loves a designer.
That's a good one. I was going to go, because thinking about his arc of his career being a second round pick by the Toronto Raptors of all teams to going over to Europe for a very long time. And then all of a sudden finding himself being one of the most pivotal role players in, you know, half a dozen title contention runs in the back part of his career. Real sort of under the hill to top of the mountain sort of conversation. And so I'm going with the Hobbit, an unexpected journey. PJ Tucker is Bilbo Baggins and has found
so
himself.
So mean.
no, it's not. Bilbo's great. We love Bilbo. You know, he kind of finds himself really moving into, oh, I can be far more than my station in life. And it's a wonderful tale. I also think, if anyone's going to make like Hobbit chic a thing, it's probably PJ Tucker on a runway walking into a game.
Like he could turn it around perhaps. Yeah, I guess he could.
Yeah, like
if
he
showed
go
up in like
a suit of some kind. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. He could do it, I suppose.
Yeah.
Or like those slippers that look like Bigfoot slippers, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I think you could pull that
no,
off.
No, I don't
as well.
Like yours. I like Devil Wears Prada, but we could do an even split. Right. Let's call this one a draw.
Sure. Okay.
If anyone contains like book multitudes, it's PJ.
Yeah, that's a really good point. We move on to the final player in the starting fives here. And it is, of course, Brook Lopez. What's Brook Lopez reading?
Frankenstein. yeah, he's reading Frankenstein. This guy loves a horror story. We know he's a Disney-ass dude. I feel like he's also like, where did I always forget where him and Robin went to school. Yale?
Stanford.
All right. So like, yeah. If I'm going to read a horror story, I'm not going to read it, for example. You know, he's like, I'm going to read some elevated classic lit.
Yeah. I'm not reading that Devin Booker bullshit. Yeah.
Frankenstein's a great story. But yeah, he's reading Frankenstein.
Okay. I was going to say he's reading 2015's Disney Storybook Collection 3rd Edition, featuring your favorite Disney characters. These best-selling storybook collections have been completely redesigned with all new covers, gilded pages, newly edited text, and a classic new look with over 250 illustrations, including full-page artwork from the Disney archives. From Frozen to The Lion King, the best love stories of all time are now even better and recreate the movie magic of the most beloved Disney films, enhanced with new pieces of art from the Disney archives. That's where I'm going. I think we can call another draw on that one, because I don't think there's a wrong answer. Brook Lopez, the easiest person to assign reading material to, I think. And that's brought us to the end of Book Club. Katie, this was fun. I thought I was gonna really show my ass as a non-reader in this one, which I guess I've admitted I'm not much of a reader, but you are such a voracious reader. I thought you were just gonna dance circles around me here, and I appreciate you not making me look stupid.
Yeah, I have to be honest. I always forget, like, I don't know, this is probably worse, but like reading books so fast, I will just immediately forget the book. I will remember what they like the story, but I just have this, I don't know, catacombs in my head of all the books that I've read, and they're just kind of floating there. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. Well, that's fine. Katie, you're smarter than me. We know that. We don't need this segment to prove that. We move on, though, to the way we close out every episode of the show. And I think we got a Homer edition of this week's Poster of the Week, the best in the NBA on social media from the last 7 days. I guess the last 9 days for us, since last we spoke was on Tuesday of last week. I'll go first. I'm going Fred VanVleet. Katie, I sent you the screen cap of one of his Instagram posts this week. Just sitting by a pool, relaxing, wearing a bucket hat, looking extremely zen, extremely like he hasn't thought about basketball in 2 months. Really exactly what I was hoping to see from Toronto Raptors players this offseason. A truly delightful and sort of reinvigorating photo for my sort of Raptors excitement for next season, realizing that these guys are actually taking this time away from basketball for themselves as opposed to getting back in the gym and doing the work. It made me feel very good. So Fred VanVleet is my Poster of the Week. Who do you got?
But I will say Fred VanVleet today was using his son to as like a barbell, and he was dragging him across the floor in the gym. So he is back in the gym grinding. But he's doing it in a really cute way.
It's comedic. It's comedic exercise. It's a different thing. Uh-huh. It's for content, I think.
Minus DeMar being dragged golfing with Kyle, and like saying in his caption that he was dragged golfing, and saying it also the expression on his face, kind of squinting in the sun on the golf cart, and just saying like, you know, yeah, he might have gotten me here, but I'm not wearing that shit. I love it. Anytime, like, just I love them hanging out. I it makes me so happy.
Yeah. How could you not? It's a truly, truly special friendship. And, you know, as much as I would like Kyle Lowry to be back with the Raptors next season, I'm also kind of, you know, thinking, oh, where could those guys team up and play together? That'd be pretty fun if they could make that happen somewhere in the NBA. But either way, Katie, that brings us to the end of this week's episode. A fun show. It was lovely chatting with you again, Katie, after 9 days without speaking, which is like an eternity for us, apparently. Do you have anything you'd like to plug before we get out of here?
What did I plug last time? Did I plug my...
I don't know if
it had come out yet, honestly. I don't think it had.
Plug it again. It's great. Why not?
Yeah, plug so it again. I wrote a feature for Dime on this like sea change of young stars, what it means for the league, how it is changing, not just the face of the league, but actually I dove into the way that the in-game like stuff of it is changing. So like the kind of plays that these young players are going, the kind of moves that are now dominating and eking out all the other ones favored by, you know, the previous generation. So what are the in-game ramifications of this, as well as the cultural ramifications of this? And what does it mean for young players to kind of get out from under the behemoths of LeBron, to an extent, KD, Harden, all those guys? It's not ageist, it's celebratory of all generations. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm pretty happy with it. As we talked about a bit earlier, I'm really happy to see what's happening in these playoffs. And I think we're all very lucky. And the last thing about it I will say is I try and talk about how insane it is that we're very much like a doomsday cult when it comes to the draft, and how we're always holding out hope for this one generational star to come and basically upend the league. And then it never happens. And we go back to our charts, much like a really shitty cult. And it's like, oh, wait, the next doomsday is actually going to happen this day. So I hope that we scrap all that, because we've kind of got like such a plethora now of talent, and we're lucky to have it.
Yep. It's very exciting. I'm enjoying the sort of lack of needing to find the next LeBron, you know, like that was such a thing in the post Jordan days, where it's like, who's the next Jordan? And it's just like, it spoiled a lot of dudes for like the general watching public. It's like, oh, I thought Jerry Stackhouse was supposed to be the next Jordan. Oh, Jerry Stackhouse is a failure. But it's like, Jerry Stackhouse is pretty damn good. I don't know. Appreciate the dude for what he is. Go read the story. It's great. You can find me, of course, Woodley Sean on Twitter. You can go watch on CEBL Plus, the premium subscription service for the CEBL. It's like $17 for the year. It's a very good deal. And I have a weekly show called CEBL Weekly on there, where we do little interviews and features and stuff like that. So that's been a lot of fun. If you want to go check out and see my face on camera, it's great. At least that's what the people are saying. I loathe looking at myself on camera. Anyway, that's going to do it. Huge thank you, as always, to our wonderful crew at Space Monkey Media. Producer Dylan, of course, making us sound wonderful. And we're saying goodbye once again to our wonderful social producer, Jess, who has gotten a full-time job and is sadly departing us. But man, Jess is the best. She makes us look so good on social. We're going to miss her deeply, and we wish her all the best in the future. And that'll do it. Thank you so much for tuning in this week. We'll talk to you again next week with another episode of Basketball?
Jesus Christ!
What?
Did you hear that thunder?